Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes.
Welcome to today's program, everybody. On the telephone today, we have with us Josh Sperling, who's the owner of Table Wine Wine Shop down in Asheville. Josh, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you came from, and how you come to own the Table Wine Wine Shop.
Sure, Chuck. Thanks for having me today. It's great to be on your show. It's great to hear your voice, and hope you're doing well. I came to wine in kind of a roundabout way. I'm from Missouri, which many people don't know, actually contains the first American viticultural zone in St. James, but not a state highly renowned for wine. Growing up, my stepfather's family lived in Herman, Missouri, which is kind of modeled after a small German village. It supported four wineries. So, you know, as a kid, when we would go visit that side of the family for holidays, they would let us have a little bit of wine. It was typically a sweeter Riesling or something along those lines. They'd water it down, but I was introduced to wine at a relatively young age. Kind of forgot about wine until after my college studies. I went to the University of Missouri in Columbia and moved to Colorado shortly thereafter college when I graduated. And the first job I got was at a place called Sundance Drug and Liquor. Yeah, we sold it all. Wine, liquor, pharmaceuticals, cards, a little bit of everything. But it was kind of the main place to buy wine in Snowmass Village near Aston. So, you know, I wasn't really interested in wine, but I working there, slowly started to get more and more interested. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that I had a history degree and there's so much history involved in wine. Long story short, the owner of that store really, she's still there, really liked me and sort of took me under her wing, started giving me bottles of wine and giving me books and said, you know, you're a smart guy and you're really taking an interest in this and I believe in you and I think you could make a career out of this. So eventually I managed that store and then eventually I met my wife in Aspen, whom I'm still married to. And once we decided to get married, we decided it was time to leave La La Land, the mountains of Colorado and Aspen and Snowmass Village, and sort of rejoin the real world. And so we ended up in Northern Virginia in the D.C. area. And I continued to work in wine, worked at a small retail store on June Pot Circle for a bit, and then worked for a distributor for about a year and a half. And it wasn't working. That area didn't work for us. We missed the mountains, and an opportunity arose in Asheville. I had never been to Asheville, but I came down for a job interview. It was actually at the Asheville Wine Market downtown, and right when I pulled into town, I'm like, whether I get this job or not, we're moving here. Luckily, I did get the job. We moved here in 2003. I worked at that store for 2 years, learned a lot. Decided to go back into distribution, work for a relatively new company called The Country Vintner, who was, like I said, relatively new in North Carolina, and took on a sales position with them and was very successful there and was at the peak of my success but hated my job. I love wine, but I don't necessarily like that part of selling it. I like more the educational consultation side of wine. So towards the end of 2009, I left that job and began writing my business plan for Table Wine. The store opened in late July of 2010, and some 7 years later, we're doing better than ever.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I know, Josh, over the years we've had a couple of meetings and a number of visits to sample wines out at your shop. Let's talk just a little bit about your shop in particular. Tell me a little bit about how much space you have, how many bottles of wine you have there.
Table Wine is about 1,500 square feet. I'd say we have currently roughly 800 different selections of wine from all parts of the world.
Well, when you come across wines that you're looking for or you think you might be interested in, how do you find those wines?
I do a lot of tasting, and part of it is just the, you know, kind of the, I guess, whatever you want to call it, the luck of the draw, having been in the business for 20 years and kind of being a student of wine, you sort of gain this knowledge of, you know, different areas and, more importantly, different producers. And that's, you know, that's one of the real features of the store, is that we're a very producer-focused store. And when I say producer, we're focused on smaller, family-owned and operated producers. So yeah, we do a lot of tasting. That's part of the game. You know, customers come in the store and they see us back there tasting, and they're like, you know, it looks like you're working really hard. For every good wine, you know, there's a number of wines that don't float my boat. So, you know, we taste almost every single wine that makes it onto the shelf in the store. And it is work. You know, it's not like we're back there sipping wine all day and just, you know, getting buzzed. We're spitting, and, you know, some days we taste 40 wines and we only find like two that we like. So, it's a lot of studying. It's keeping in touch with friends of mine that are in the wine trade all over the country. It's studying blogs. There are certain jobs where you don't want to take your work home with you, but I would say that wine is one of those jobs where taking your work home with you is relatively fun. So, you know, I live it, I love it, and I've turned a hobby into a career.
Josh, tell us about how wines show up in your shop. This is something that the public generally doesn't hear about.
We get people that come in, you know, looking for wines that we don't necessarily carry, and we constantly say, you know, we don't have that one, but we'd be glad to order that for you. And I think that a lot of consumers just sort of think that we would have to go, like, directly to the winery to get that, and it'd be a time-consuming and complex process. But in North Carolina, just like most states, there's a three-tier system. So, I mean, you've got the producer or the importer, and then you've got the distributor, and then you've got the retailer. So I order wines through North Carolina licensed distributors, some who are based here locally, some who are based in other parts of the state. And it's a really simple process. Most of those distributors, you know, they make at least one delivery per week, but most of them deliver two up to four times per week. So, you know, we've got wines coming into the store basically Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So we're accepting deliveries 4 days a week from distributors. And, you know, these days, wine is, because I'm sure you know this, but I mean, wine is really, it's somewhat of a fragile product in the sense that it can't be exposed to heat for long periods of time. So we're really careful about the distributors and suppliers that we work with to make sure that they have proper temperature-controlled storage, temperature-controlled trucks to make sure the wine gets to our store the way it's supposed to be.
I guess we should probably point out that a good wine cellar requires that you have no heat, that is, keep it cool, but also keep it dark and vibration-free.
That is correct. One of the other things, when you sometimes people will come to the store peak sun later in the afternoon, and, you know, I had curtains custom made for the front windows. So sometimes it looks like, you know, there's something fishy going on inside the store because the curtains are pulled, but all we're really doing is, you know, keeping the sun and the heat off of our, off of the product. In addition, you know, I had the store, was designed by some friends of mine. You know, I've got really low-burning light bulbs. If you walk into a wine store and see fluorescent bulbs, that's not a good thing. They burn hot. You can touch my light bulbs at the store with your bare hand, and it won't burn you at all. But yeah, we take all those precautions and, you know, take that very seriously.
Well, if I were to look at your schedule, do you do tastings?
We do. We do a lot of tastings. I mean, standard every Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. and every Saturday from 2 to 5 p.m. Almost all those tastings are free to the public, and we'll pour anywhere from 3 to 4 wines. There's usually some sort of thematic to the tasting. The last Saturday of each month, we do what we call a Super Saturday wine tasting, where we'll pour either a larger lineup of wines. The past couple of those, we've poured 10 wines. The next one's coming up on September the 30th. We're only pouring 6 wines, but we are pouring some more premium wines that retail in the $25 to $50 price range. And we do charge a small fee. It's $5 to taste through the wines, which we think is more than fair considering the quality and breadth of selection that we bring to those tastings.
Well, I think it's a good service to provide your customers to be able to let them come in and do the tastings, because I keep telling everybody the worst thing you can possibly do is to walk into a wine store and say, oh, honey, look, there's a pretty bottle, or there's a pretty label with a horse's head on it. Let's buy that one. They really should taste it before they buy it.
Yeah, no, that is honestly the worst way to buy wine. And it's one of the things, I would say, in the modern sort of wine game that kind of irks me a little bit, is that, you know, you have these marketing companies who, they get paid to design really, really catchy labels. And I get it to a certain extent. You know, the humans are drawn to colors and shapes and sizes on all the products we buy, but just because that draws you in doesn't mean what's inside the bottle is any good. And, I know for a fact, having been in the business for the number of years I have, that there are many, many wine companies out there who spend more money on the marketing end of things, on the labeling, on the full page ads in Wine Spectator and the New York Times than they do on the juice that goes inside the bottle. And that's one of the things that, you know, shopping at a small independent retailer like us helps you to avoid getting sucked into buying that beautiful looking bottle that once you pull the cork and pour it in your glass is disappointing.
Yes, it's been my experience over the years that a lot of companies do that. A lot. And I've traveled from Australia to South Africa, all over Europe, visiting wineries and so forth. And it's crazy how they do that.
Yeah, it's by no means just in the U.S. I mean, and it's also not isolated to wine producing countries in what we call the New World, which would be, you know, the Southern Hemisphere in the U.S. It happens in Italy, it happens in Spain, it happens in France. And I've traveled to many of those places as well. And there's just as many mediocre and subpar wines produced in Europe as there are in the New World. It goes back to what I said before. We taste everything before it comes into the store. Does that mean that you're going to like it? Not necessarily, but once we get to know you and talk to you and, you know, fine-tune where your palate is, then yeah, we're gonna do a good job helping you select wines that you're going to like every time.
Well, Josh, we're going to take a break about this point in time, and when we come back, I'd like to ask you an interesting question about what your worst nightmare might be when somebody walks in the front door looking for wine. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by Ina Iverson's Indoor Smoking Kit. Most of our listeners these days are non-smokers, but we all have friends who still smoke, even though they know it is bad for their health. When our smoking friends come to our home, we always get a little nervous about asking them not to smoke in our own home. It makes it seem inhospitable, if you know what I mean. The perfect host now has a better idea to the awkward suggestion of please smoke outside or please don't smoke in here, especially if it is winter and the wind is wailing across your back porch. Now you can offer your smoking guests the perfect alternative solution, Ina Iverson's Indoor Smoking Kit. Ina has packed her indoor smoking kit in a plain Ziploc sandwich baggie so it's small and easy to keep on hand in a convenient location, ready for your next smoking guest. The Ziploc baggie contains a large black plastic trash bag, a piece of string, and instructions. Ina confirms how easy it is to use and has tested it on her friends and relatives. Your smoking guest just places the black plastic garbage bag over their head and pulls it down around their waist. Then simply tie the provided string around the waist, providing a small private space for them to smoke and prevent the smoke from escaping into the room. Then they can smoke as much as they want without disturbing your non-smoking family members or leaving your carpet and drapes filled with that oppressive tobacco smoke smell. Ina says she can hear her guests talking clearly through the plastic bag as they smoke. Most of her guests who smoke don't come back again and whip out their cigs. Some just don't come back.
Ina is working on a similar solution for the unwanted door-to-door salesman. Ina Iverson's Indoor Smoking Kit is another special product made in the good old USA here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Ina Iverson's Indoor Smoking Kit for $1.298 at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been on the telephone today with Josh Burling, who's the owner of Table Wine down in Asheville. Josh, just before the break, we were talking about asking a question about what is your worst nightmare? What is the customer that walks in the front door that just gives you the craziest time you have to deal with?
The customers that would maybe push my buttons a little more than others, the ones who are stuck on, like, one wine, who drink the same thing over and over again. And granted, you know, as someone who sells wine for a living, it does make my life easy. But it's also, there are over three, if we're just talking about vinifera grapes like Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, and on, there's believed to be over 3,000 different grape varieties. And I guess I think people are missing out on the joys of wine by not exploring some of those other grapes, exploring other countries' wines, exploring different sort of wine cultures and traditions. If I had to pick one, I mean, overall, I'm a pretty happy-go-lucky guy, and it kind of takes a lot to rile me up. But if it were anything, it would be, I guess I would call them less adventurous wine drinkers. You know, I still like them, but I'm always trying to push people out of their comfort zone, into new territories, and I think that's, you know, for me, that's the real, that's one of the true joys of wine, is to experience as many different wines in your life as you possibly can. It doesn't mean you're going to like them all, but just sort of look at it and understand that if it's being made somewhere, there's someone that believes that it should be made. And, you know, if people often ask me, like, when are you going to start your own winery? I'm like, I'm not. I am not a farmer. And that's what is involved in starting a winery. It's hard work. You know it, Chuck.
I have a vineyard. Yes, indeedy. It is work.
It is hard work. It is, you know, there's so many variables that you have no control over. So that's my thing. And something just from that conversation that sort of came to mind is when we're doing a tasting and someone's in the store and they say, this wine sucks or this wine's horrible. Who appointed you the flavor dictator? The proper way at a tasting to express, you're more than welcome to express your opinion. To say, you know what, that one's not for me. Or, wow, I love that wine. But to sort of come in with that that air of arrogance, and that can kind of rile me up, and I will challenge people when they say things like that by simply saying, oh, you don't care for that wine. While the person next to them oftentimes is like, oh, my God, I love this wine. And that's wine. Different palates, different people, different levels of experience with wine. I guess that's what makes the wine world go round.
We've had a lot of experience with that, as you know, through the Asheville Wine and Food Festival. French Broad Vignerons that we are members of have been providing the wine judges for and training the wine judges for that organization for a number of years. But it's astounding when you get people come in and say, oh, that's a terrible wine. Oh, I don't like that wine. But it's really just their palate. The true test of a good wine for you is you put it in a glass and you drink it and you like it. And if you don't like it, look for another one.
That's it, and I think it's totally acceptable to say, you know what, that one's not for me, but it may be for somebody else. But to just yep. sort of dismiss it and say, you know, that kind of drives me crazy. I'm like, someone has sweated, cried, shed blood to get this into a bottle, and you're neglecting the fact that that's what it took to get that into the bottle. So.
My wife and I were at a tasting at one of the local wine shops, I guess it's been maybe 2 or 3 years ago now, and we both enjoy going to wine tastings, and so we were sitting there and sniffing and sipping and disgusting and tasting, and both of us looked at each other when we sipped this one wine and said, oh my God, that is terrible. And so And it wasn't that it was an unhealthy wine, you know, poorly made or anything like that. It just wasn't for us, you know. And there was a guy in front of us, and son of a gun, he walks up there and tasted that, and he just thought he had died and gone to heaven and bought a case on the spot. And my wife says, how can he possibly do that? I said, it's different strokes for different folks.
That's correct. That's correct. And the more, like, you know, the more tastings you go to, you sort of, you know, you will get caught by surprise. And it's, I just learned from, you know, some of my mentors in the business that, you know, for me, going to a tasting is more like going to, you know, a trade tasting. You know, one of the distributors has, like, a trade show or an importer's in town. If I don't like something, I simply just don't have a whole lot to say about it. And just let's move on to the next one. You're exactly right. Different strokes for different folks.
Well, let me give you a different scenario. You've got a guy that comes in front of your shop and says, Josh, quick, I've got to have a wine for dinner.
I love that. You know, I am by no means a chef, but I think one of the things that people that have worked in the wine industry for many years, one of their side hobbies is certainly cooking and eating in general. So I do a fair amount of cooking at home, and my wife does as well. So I am pretty well versed in, you know, helping people pick out a wine that will pair with their food. And I think the ideal sort of partnership there is, you know, and this is getting deep, but where the wine, you know, you take a bite of the food and you take a sip of the wine, and the wine makes the food taste better and the food makes the wine taste better. That's when magic happens. So, yeah, if a guy comes in and says that, I will quickly ask him, what's for dinner? And I can sort of, having worked in retail for so many years and working with the public for so many years, I'm pretty good at reading people, and I can tell when someone's in a hurry. And if they're in a real hurry, it's like, oh, you're having pork? Pinot Noir. Here you go. And he's out the door. Now, sometimes we get people that will come in who are, you know, planning a pretty elaborate dinner party with different courses, and, you know, they give us a little more time, and I'll sort of, they'll say, you know, I don't need to know today. It's not until this weekend, so you can spend some time thinking about it. And I'll actually even, like, study. I'll contact some of my friends who are sommeliers in restaurants and provide that service to our customers. But yeah, that's one of the funnest things. And that's one of the other things we didn't really touch on, Chuck, was, I've been doing, you know, I would say like quarterly, some wine dinners with local, you know, independently owned restaurants. I've got one coming up in September with Corner Kitchen. Unfortunately, that one is sold out, but there's another one in the works that's happening in the latter part of October.
Well, Josh, sounds like you have some fun stuff going there. Tell people how they can find you, how they can reach you, make contact with your shop.
The physical location of the store is 1550 Hendersonville Road. We're in the Wilcox Travel Center. So we're in South Asheville, almost exactly 5 miles south of the Biltmore Estate. So if you're heading south on Hendersonville Road, once you pass the Fresh Market, then you'll pass the Blue Ridge Parkway. We're in the next little shopping center there on the left, right across from the Ramble. We're very active on social media. We've got a Facebook page, it's just Table Wine. Twitter, Instagram. We've got a website, it's just tablewineasheville.com. Phone number is, the number of the store is 828-505-8588. And you can also always feel free, if you have any wine questions, you can always email me at josh@tablewineasheville.com.
Well, that pretty much gives people a way to find you.
We also have a newsletter, which you can sign up for on the website, which will keep you in the loop on upcoming tastings, wine dinners, any other events we have planned, and I also post those rather frequently to social media. So follow us. You'll stay in the know.
Well, it sounds like you've got some fun things going there, Josh. I'd like to encourage the radio audience to check out your shop next time they're in South Asheville. As I said before, I'd been there a number of times. You got some really wonderful wines there. And the fact that you do all the personal tastings makes it possible that you're going to get a good wine there.
Yeah. I mean, that's the name of the game. And it's really about interacting one-on-one with customers, getting to know them, getting to know their palates, getting to know their likes and their dislikes, and creating sort of a really pleasant shopping experience for anyone that comes in the store, regardless of their level of wine knowledge.
Well, Josh, I know we had mentioned a couple of things earlier, but one of the things I wanted to touch on is, do you have some specific things that you do along the area of wine education to help the public learn about wine?
I tried some of those early on in terms of sort of like wine 101 classes, but, you know, I guess I came to the point that the best way to learn about wine is to taste as much of it as you possibly can, and to taste it with, whether it's at my store or whether it's at one of the many other great independent wine stores in Western North Carolina, it's tasting wine with people that can sort of tell you the stories. It's tuning in and listening. It's empowering yourself is the best way to learn about wine. That's how I learned about wine. I'm on my third copy of the Wine Bible, which I think is still one of the great fundamental books and fun to read books out there on wine. But also, you know, coming in the store and spending time with myself or one of my staff. I have three employees, one of whom's been with me for over 4 years, another one who's been with me for about a year, and we just hired a young lady who's been with us for a little over a month. And all of us are veterans of the wine trade. I think combined we offer close to over 40 years of experience in the wine trade, and we don't talk down to people, we talk with people, and that's the way. It's that combination of tasting and coming in and spending time with us and taking wine home with you, because, you know, I think you'll agree with me, like coming to a wine tasting, I mean, I always equate it with, and I'm constantly brainstorming on ways to make the wine tasting experience at the store better when you're doing a lot of public tastings. But when you come to the store and you get a little taste out of a small glass, and you get, you know, you've got a tasting sheet in front of you, and you've got me or one of my staff talking about the wine, almost like when you go to the movies and you're going to watch the main feature, but you really are, you're almost just getting the sneak preview there. So you really, you're kind of going on your gut instinct, but, you know, versus taking a bottle of wine home, sitting on your couch or your back porch, drinking it out of your favorite, you know, proper wine glass is a totally different experience. So I think it's that combination of coming to the store, spending time with us, but also enjoying wine at home and, you know, empowering yourself through studying wine, whether it be with books, whether it be with a tasting group. That is my formula for wine education and wine knowledge.
Well, Josh, we certainly appreciate your taking time to be with us today on our radio program. I want to encourage folks again to go down and try your wines at your shop, Table Wine, in South Asheville. And Josh, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Please do stay in touch.
Will do, Chuck. Thanks for having me, and look forward to seeing you at the store.
My pleasure. Okay, folks, we'll call it a wrap for today's program.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!